This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area's talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In Depth.
On this episode of In Depth, we turn to Odyssey's I'm Listening, Talk Away the Dark, a limited series where conversations cover grief, loss, and suicide. Odyssey's David O'Leary is putting the focus onto what it means to be there for your community. He is joined by the Vice President of Health, Equity, and Engagement for the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, Victor Armstrong, and Mikhail Clark, father, husband, author, entrepreneur, and podcaster in the mental health space.
Mikhail, it's great to have you with us. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
You know, when you talked, Mikhail, about being in a tough spot financially and career-wise, and I'm interested in hearing how that might have impacted your mental health, but you said being vulnerable and reaching out to someone was kind of transformational for you at the time. And it's a tough thing for many people to do, to reach out when they're in that position.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, being a man, being the quote unquote head of the household, being somebody who was raised to seek out and want to be independent and to feel powerful in certain ways, it's tough when you don't feel like you have the independence and the power and stability that you want. And so, yeah, I've experienced a number of different seasons where I have felt not like myself. I have felt not powerful. I have felt weak and inadequate. And that has been very difficult for me to navigate. And I think my natural tendency is to keep that inside and to tell myself that I'll be able to figure it out. I'll be able to make a way and to make it make sense myself, which is not always the best approach. I think that it sounds great, but there are a lot of moments when I eventually humble myself and realize that it's actually better to let somebody in to talk about what I'm experiencing and to not try to tackle both the feelings and the actual problem by myself. And so that is an ongoing thing for me.
I think it's an ongoing thing for a lot of people. I don't think you're alone there, Mikhail, at all. And Vic, I'll bring you in. There are many communities that struggle to talk about this thing that's so important to talk about, our mental health.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, you know, when Mikhail is talking about his situation, and when you talk about, you know, my natural tendency is to, you know, feel like I should do this, I feel like I should do that. And so much of what I think happens with us, especially as men, and as you say, David, it also plays out differently and even more so in different communities. But a lot of what we feel like is our natural instinct to want to do things. It's really where we've been socialized to believe that we're supposed to act. And so this whole notion that we're supposed to be strong and we're supposed to not show vulnerability, those are things we've been socialized to believe. And especially in Black and brown communities, I know growing up as a Black male in a rural North Carolina and being the son of a preacher, you know, there were some things that were instilled in me about this is how you are supposed to navigate life. And when we don't do those things, when we can't navigate those things and show up the way that we've been socialized to believe we're supposed to, that becomes additional baggage that we carry because we feel like we're not measuring up.
I think the therapists and the psychologists, the clinicians call it core constructs. It's really, it's a part of you. And I mean, we've touched on a little bit of it, certainly as men, it's one of the populations, middle-aged men particularly, that show elevated risk for suicide because, well, for a variety of reasons. There's no one because, but certainly because it's difficult to talk about mental health and suicide. It's getting better. We've made steps, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. David, I do want to touch on something you just pointed out, because I do think sometimes, too, we think about, we talk about suicide, we think about suicide as being, you know, a disease in and of itself. And suicide really is not a disease. It's the worst possible outcome of a combination of a lot of very complex things, often including mental health challenges. But there's no one thing. So there are a lot of things that we encounter, that we endure, that we experience, some traumatic, some not traumatic, but all those things we carry with us, and we pack them down. And when we don't allow those things to breathe, and we don't allow ourselves to process those things, and we don't allow ourselves to even let go of some of those things, you know, over time, it really impacts our mental well-being. And you can find yourself being overwhelmed by a lot of smaller things, not necessarily that one big thing.
That's a great point, Vic. I know research has shown, and AFSP's position on it, is that there is no, as you noted, no single cause for suicide. In fact, it happens when a variety of things, a confluence of feelings and events, and everybody's nodding because we know this, come together and create this overwhelming feeling of despair and hopelessness. Depression can be one of the things that contributes to it. It's the most common condition associated with suicide, but there are many, many things. And oftentimes I think people want to simplify it and say, well, what happened? What was the cause or the precipitating incident or event that made this person choose suicide? And it's a little more nuanced and a little more complicated than that. I think, you know, again, AFSP's position for so long is that if you reach out to someone who is struggling, you can potentially save their life. It's really low-hanging fruit and an easy thing to do to reach out to someone who you think may be struggling to say, geez, I care about you. What's going on? Are you okay? You're not yourself. Can we talk a little bit about how that conversation may happen in each of your communities, maybe in your family growing up, Vic? That might be something that that didn't happen. It doesn't sound like that would happen in those terms anyway.
It's not something that happened then. It's something that even now, you know, we have conversations. I talk to my father, who's now 82 years old. I talk to my father and my siblings. And I even noticed that we have different, really kind of different recollections of what childhood was like, which also indicates that everyone internalizes their life journey, their life experience differently. And so that conversation can show up differently in different communities. But the overarching fact is that we first have to understand that suicide is preventable. It is a public health issue. And we do believe that the way to combat suicide is by learning the risks and the warning signs. And if we can learn those risks and warning signs, and then if we can engage people in conversation, there's a way that this works in any community. We have to get past the notion that that we're somehow infringing on a person's privacy by asking them if they're thinking about suicide. If you see someone that you think is struggling, we encourage you to ask them clearly, concisely, confidently if they're thinking about suicide.
Mikhail, your podcast, which I love, it's called After You Fail, because there is an after. There's always an after you fail. We all fail and we all pick ourselves up, hopefully, and learn from it. How is this landing? How's this conversation landing with you?
Vic, you were talking about not growing up always feeling like you could talk about certain things or have certain conversations. It didn't really occur to me that I should just talk to people about things that I felt until I was in my teens or maybe even a young adult. It just didn't even feel like a thing. I grew up assuming that it just made sense to hold it inside and to figure it out. And if somebody asked me specifically, I might bring it up. I still do this now sometimes. I would kind of like put a feeler out and be like, oh, you know, there's some stuff going on. And I would wait for somebody to say, well, Mikel, what is going on? What is happening? Because I hadn't given myself permission to just say, oh, I am sad. I am depressed. I am struggling. I am broke. I feel disempowered. I hadn't given myself permission, even inside my circle of friends that I trust and love. I hadn't given myself permission to just say the thing, right? And so that has been one of the most important journeys for me, with regards to all the different emotions and things that I feel. Everything that is not, it's not what I would naturally share if somebody asks, oh, how are you? It's not the entry point to a conversation, but it is an important thing to share with people that are, again, part of a certain circle of folks who have a level of intimacy with me.
Geez, I'm interested in asking both of you, how do you, just as you were speaking, Mikel, and Vic, in our conversations too, it's how do you know you're in a safe space? The concept of like being in a safe space where you can talk about this stuff and know that you're going to be taken seriously. Because you really are making yourself vulnerable when you said, you know what, things aren't right. And I'm feeling this way and I don't know what to do with these feelings. In each of your experiences, how have you been able to determine that this is something I can bring up, that I'm safe here to do this and I'm not going to be laughed out of the room or people are going to take me seriously?
I would say I don't know that I haven't known that I've been in a safe space. I have said some vulnerable things to family members and people who I thought of as friends, and they have made light of what I was experiencing, not responded in a supportive way, in a way that helped me. And I've been hurt when I have expressed things like that. And so I think for me, it's not about knowing that I'm in a safe space, but it is a matter of me trusting myself enough to say, I'm going to make space for a conversation that I need. I'm going to assume that I'm in a safe space and allow myself to create an opportunity to receive what I might need.
You know, one thing I think too, in what Mikel said there too, is that it's important for us to always remember that people who are hurting decide if we're safe to talk to or not. And so oftentimes there are people who may need to open up and talk about things that are going on with them, but they're not willing to do that because we haven't demonstrated to them that we are safe for them to share. So I'm always encouraging folks, and especially as I talk with folks in Black and brown spaces where we haven't had these conversations as much, I'm always encouraging people to make themselves a safe space for other folks that may be hurting. And the other thing I think is that we're learning better. And I use AFSP as an example. We're learning better about how to create safe spaces and what safe spaces in communities look like. And so that might mean that rather than trying to create a space that people recognize as safe, you pick a space that's already safe and you build on that space. Like we do a lot of work in faith-based communities because for a lot of folks, that's already a safe space. So how do we create an environment where we utilize that so that people who have already identified that safe space, because for Black people, they're much more likely to go to a pastor than a psychologist. But the final thing I would say is this. I think for me, it is also about, and Mikel touched on this too, I have to first create safe space within myself.
Well, more of these conversations are happening. We're hoping, and it's because of conversations like this that we're having on I'm Listening. I thank you both very, very much for sharing, for being with us this morning and encouraging us all to be a little more mindful about our mental health and that for ourselves, but also for those that we care about. Mikel Clark is the author of Eyes on the Road and also the host of the After You Fail podcast. And Vic Armstrong joins us as AFSP's Vice President for Health Equity and Engagement. Again, if you want to find out more about the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, please go to afsp.org. There's a million ways for you to be involved. And if you're struggling or are caring for someone who is, please dial 988 to get care and help.
In Depth will return after a moment.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, It can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
There's a very powerful public service campaign, AFSP's PSA campaign called Talk Away the Dark, which demonstrates really, really powerfully how important this conversation can be in letting someone know that there is hope, that they're not alone. And as you noted, Vic, you don't have to solve the problem, but just listening can be tremendously powerful for someone who is struggling. You referenced this a little earlier, Vic, about, you know, trying to do it one-on-one and in a quiet place. Are there some sort of guidelines in terms of how you have that conversation, not trying to solve the problem, trying to just be encouraging and being and listening? What else are we trying to do when we have that conversation?
One of the things I like to do, especially if you're a little tentative about asking the question, is, or if you're concerned about how that person is going to receive you asking them the question, if there are behaviors, if there are things that you see that you recognize that are warning signs for you regarding that person, I point to the warning signs. That way, it's not like I'm critiquing you. I'm saying to you, you know, you generally have been, you know, we met for breakfast every Friday for the past, you know, so many years. And I noticed that we, you know, you don't feel like doing that anymore, or you don't want to, you know, go to the ball game. We've been doing this, you know, forever. Or I noticed that you have been very quiet lately. You're usually a much more talkative person. And if I can point to that and say, do you want to talk about what's going on with you? And if I suspect that that person may be suicidal, I will sometimes say other people who have gone what you're going through, what you're going through, have sometimes thought about suicide. Are you thinking about suicide? So it's asking the question really in a way that allows that person to understand that I'm asking because I'm concerned about you. I'm not being nosy. I'm not being judgmental, but I'm concerned because I've seen something that concerns me. And as I mentioned earlier, if possible, you want to get that person alone by themselves. And when you ask the question, listen, don't try to fix it. Don't try to resolve it. Validate their feelings. Always remember that just because you don't understand their pain makes it no less real. So validate their feelings. Don't try to talk them out of what they're feeling. Don't try to convince them that they should be here another day. Try to find out what the challenges are they're addressing and then try to convince them to get help.
I love what Mikhail said a little while ago about how, you know, on the other end of this, hopefully you're going to have a stronger, deeper relationship with this person. You've shown them that you care, that you're concerned, that you're watching, and that you're interested in their well-being.
One funny thing too, David, when I think about that, and this is one of the reasons too, I ask people sometimes, you know, can you tell me how suicide became an option? Can you tell me how you came to the conclusion that suicide was the pathway you wanted to take? And a lot of people start opening up and talk about that, because I know for myself, I cannot tell you how many times I may have been upset with my wife, and I'm going to tell her all the reasons why I'm upset and all the things that she did wrong that made me upset. And the minute I start to say it out loud, I realize, you know what?
It's something else entirely.
This was really me. It was not her. Yeah, it was something else entirely. And so sometimes as we start to say things out loud, we realize, you know what? This is really not what I thought it was. It's really something different.
I want to talk specifically, by the way, and I want to note, if you're listening, thank you for being tuned in, and you want to find out more about the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, it's afsp.org. If you're listening and struggling and feel like you need to talk to somebody right now, 988 is the number. That's a 3-digit number to call from anywhere in the country, and you'll get help. Or if you're with someone who may need care, Those warning signs that we talked about, very often people want to know specifically, what am I watching for with someone? And you noted a couple of them, Vic, who is struggling, or I think may be struggling with a suicidal, you know, impulse or ideation. Talk, behavior, and mood. There's sort of three categories. People will often talk about ending their life if they're struggling. Talk about like feeling hopeless and being a burden, feeling trapped, that kind of thing, having no reason to live. Not a surprise there. That's the kind of talk I think we should all take seriously when we hear it.
I mean, I've seen people even Googling ways to die by suicide. You know, things like that. Take that very seriously.
You know, I think it's also worth noting that there are, you noted this quickly, Vic, risk factors. There are things that may predispose someone to an elevated risk for suicide or for mental health problems. For example, if you have been exposed to suicide, if you've lost a family member to suicide, the data indicates, it's just a fact, that you're at a higher risk for suicide. I think knowing that is important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, knowing your disposition is extremely important. There are also things, too, that that put us at higher risk that are not necessarily things that are attributable to your character, your personality. It just is. Like, for example, I tell people all the time, we need to be mindful that the most lethal means is dying by gun. And so we, you know, this is not to say that people who own firearms are any less stable. It's not to say people who own firearms are more suicidal. It is to say that it's a more lethal means. 90% of people who attempt suicide by firearm are going to die. 90% of people who attempt suicide other ways are not going to die. And so, you know, things like that we want to think about, even when we're having those conversations with people, if there's a way also possible, if you know that that person has decided on a way that they're going to end their life, if you can separate them from those, you know, those means, that's also something that we want to try to consider. And I will add this. People often think that, well, if I stop them, they'll just find another way. Research says that's not the case either.
And I think to add to that, what Vic was saying about stopping them and stopping them from having one means of committing suicide, that shows that person that somebody cared enough to intervene, which also I think might make them feel a bit less lonely in the moment.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mikel. I think as you were saying earlier about sort of putting yourself out there and being vulnerable with your friend group or your board of directors, whoever those people are in your life that you can share such things with. I think very often, you know, I don't know what we expect, but often what we hear is me too. You know, I struggle with those same things too. And when we hear that, it just takes a load off and allows us to be a little more open to sharing that kind of thing with others, or at least to have a deeper, meaningful conversation with the individual that we're talking to.
When you talk about the safe space too, David, I found, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing, Mikel too, I'm sure you've seen it, that people, because we talk about it, because we're in this space, people come to me all the time and they will say, you know, I've been struggling with this. My child has been struggling with this. You know, I dealt with this years ago. I'm glad you're talking about this. There are so many people who are hurting. They're looking for someone safe to talk to.
I've known people, and maybe you guys have had the same experience, that I've known for years and have known that I've volunteered, you know, and worked with AFSP in this area for many, many years. And for whatever reason, it took them quite a long time to finally feel to put themselves out there. And I'm glad they did, but it speaks to how difficult it is for many people to bring this up, even knowing that, you know, they're among friends.
And it's oftentimes some of the people who we think are the strong friends, who are the ones we don't imagine experiencing issues like this. And sometimes I'll share a vulnerable thing attached to a difficult emotion, and folks that I would just never expect to experience what I'm talking about are the ones who come out like, yeah, me too.
There are, you know, we talked about the risk strategies, those things that may put you at a higher risk for mental health issues and suicide. There are also, on the other side of the coin, there's things we can all do to sort of put ourselves in a better place. I mean, I like to run a little bit, Vic. I know you're a big gym guy. I've seen you on the treadmills when we've been at events together. We all do what we can to care for our physical health, but there are things that we can do to care for our mental health as well. I don't know, Vic, if you want to speak to just a couple of those.
Yeah, you know, and I would say number one is do what works for you. You know, not everything works for everyone. So do what works for you. But the things that, you know, I think are kind of universal are if you can get outside, get fresh air, sunshine, if you're able, physically able to take a walk, Those kind of things are always good. Physical exercise is good. It releases endorphins, that the feel-good endorphins, we call them. So if you're able to physically exercise, that's always good. But also find what helps you. Like for me, in addition to exercise, I post every day on social media, and I do it because for me, it's therapeutic. I feel like I'm putting something good in the world. And if there are days where I can't, or if I mean late, I won't say days I can't do it, because I don't think I've missed a day posting in probably at least 5 years now. But it for me, it is therapeutic, and I feel like I'm putting something positive in the world. So you find those things that work for you in terms of your mental well-being. It's always good if you can carve out time for just some mindfulness, just putting yourself in a place where you can free your mind, ease your mind, give yourself some time just to relax and get away from everything. Those little things help. But the thing I always say to people is find what works for you.
Mikel, what's working for you?
I also post pretty often. I miss at least a day a week, so I can't be, you know, on Vic's level as far as consistency. But in a similar vein, writing my social media content, I try to write things to empower, encourage, and affirm people like myself who are creative and passionate, which, you know, passion oftentimes leads to strong emotions in other areas and vulnerability and the other side of that coin. And so I write a lot of content that speaks to those people and offers empowering messages. That helps me a lot. I have a gratitude practice. I do my best to write in my gratitude journal every night. And I just try to give myself things to look forward to, short term and long term. Tonight, I know I'm going to see my daughter. She's going to throw some kind of toy at my head. It's probably going to hurt, but it's going to be hilarious. I'm going to have a good time with my family. I know that at some point, the next couple of weeks, I'm going to get up with some friends, you know, have a good meal, have a good time, and enjoy myself in that way. I'll also say I'm a calisthenics guy right now, but also big on fitness. Just really for me, getting outside and being able to work out is big. Getting some fresh air and inserting myself in that way, and meditation.
Oh, I love this stuff. The exercise, even sleep, which is one of those things I've been trying to get on lately. It's something we all complain about, it, but it's the easiest, lowest hanging fruit. Just see if you can get 7-8 hours a night, and it will go such a long way to improving just your health in general, but certainly your mental health too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, more of these conversations are happening. We're hoping, and it's because of conversations like this that we're having on I'm Listening. I thank you both very, very much for sharing, for being with us this morning, and encouraging us all to be a little more mindful about our mental health, and that for ourselves, but also for those that we care about.
Well, thank you so much. I have appreciated this conversation.
Mikel, thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And I think it's always good to just talk with other people, because I'm talking to an audience now, but this combo will help me in the future too. So thank you all as well.
Mikel Clark is the author of Eyes on the Road and also the host of the After You Fail podcast. And Vic Armstrong joins us as AFSP's Vice President for Health Equity and Engagement. Again, if you want to find out more about the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, please go to afsp.org. There's a million ways for you to be involved. And if you're struggling or are caring for someone who is, please dial 988 to get care and help. I'm David O'Leary. This is I'm Listening from Odyssey.
To find out more about Talk Away the Dark, please visit afsp.org. That's afsp.org. And if you or someone you know is in crisis, please call or text 988.
You can listen to this episode and past episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. You can also listen to In Depth episodes on the Odyssey app on your smartphone. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit KCBSRadio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.